Welcome to Monday Morning Murder in the News with Alyssa Carroll.
Good morning, heathens, and happy Murder in the News Monday. We are gathered here today because the rest of the regular news is just hot, scary garbage, and you know you'd rather be hearing me end my bullshit anyway. I collect news articles, along with articles sent to me by you, my beloveds, and others. So thank you for submitting. And unlike my regular podcast that I write out in its entirety before I record, this is unscripted, and I don't read the articles past the headline so you and I can react together. So let's go.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Our first article comes from abc7.com, and the title reads, Teen Sentenced to 5 Years in Youth Facility for Killing a Fashion District Store Owner, coming out of Los Angeles. One of two teens accused of fatally stabbing a Fashion District store owner during a robbery last year has been sentenced to 5 years in a juvenile facility, officials said Tuesday. The defendant, who was 17 at the time of the killing last October, admitted to voluntary manslaughter and received the maximum sentence for that charge for a juvenile, 5 years in a secure youth treatment facility, according to the Los Angeles District Attorney's Office. The case involving the other defendant, also 17 at the time, is still going through the legal system, with the next court date set in 2 weeks. The names of the two juveniles have not been disclosed personally. No, publicly. The store owner, Do Young Lee, 56, was fatally stabbed near the wig store he ran for almost 2 decades. Witnesses say two teens tried to steal a wig from the store, but the owner chased and confronted them, leading to the stabbing. Friends and family members say over the years, the store owner was involved in multiple incidents involving confronting shoplifters, sometimes ending up injured but continuing to stand his ground. Other store owners described him as heroic, seeing his efforts as symbolically standing up for them as well. End of that article. I disagree with the stabbing situation, 17 years old, and just getting voluntary manslaughter. I think maybe it should have been a little harsher. Our next article comes from WMTW.com, WMTW8ABC. And the title reads, Midwest Mystery. Iowa man still missing. 2 weeks after semi holding baby pigs was found on highway. So you know I had to read that one to you, right? So coming out of Des Moines, Iowa, David Schultz's semi-truck was found 2 weeks ago on a rural highway in northwest Iowa, its trailer still filled with baby pigs he was transporting. Schultz's wallet and phone were inside, and his jacket was on the side of the road. But Schultz was nowhere to be found, and his November 21st disappearance outside Sac City remains a mystery. His wife said something must have gone wrong, calling the 53-year-old father of two a dependable man with a strong work ethic. Quote, "This is not something David would do," Sarah told the Sioux City Journal. "He would never leave. His family is his life." Hundreds of people have volunteered to search for Schultz, but after scouring 100,000 acres near the highway, the effort was paused as searchers considered their next steps. Leaders of the search were convinced that they would have found Schultz if he had wandered off because of a medical emergency or some other problem. Iowa's Division of Criminal Investigation is assisting the Sac County Sheriff's Office and the Lakeview Police Department in this case. Iowa DCI referred the Associated Press to the Sac County Sheriff's Office, which declined to comment on the active investigation. Schultz of Wall Lake didn't arrive as expected with the load of pigs on November 21st in Sac City, Iowa, a small farming town about 90 miles northwest of Des Moines. No one could get him on the phone. The truck was found later that afternoon, less than 10 miles northeast of his destination, a livestock dealer in Sac City, according to Jake Rowley, the regional team leader of United Cajun Navy, a nonprofit search and rescue organization that typically responds to natural disasters. Schultz's truck wasn't running when it was found in the middle of the two-lane highway. It was facing northbound, Rowley said, even though it should have been headed southbound to get to Sac City. The disappearance has mystified surrounding communities in Iowa, prompting more than 250 individual volunteers to join the search. United Cajun Navy has volunteered to take over the search to allow law enforcement to focus on the investigation, Rowley said. But he hopes to see more from Iowa DCI and other investigators. Quote, maybe they're doing a bunch on the computers, but they're just not really active in the scenario, Rowley said. An organization the size of DCI should be able to come in and make a splash, in my opinion. End quote. And so with this article, I have questions. So they say they found his semi and it was not running, so he shut it off. That is unusual for truck drivers. I'm married to one, so I can say with utter confidence that they don't just shut that truck off when they're parked in the middle of the road. It's because the truck runs on, well, it's super complicated, but anyway, the trucks all kind of run on air, right? So when you shut the truck off, then if you have any air leaks or anything, you know, like the airbags lower, you know, there's air brakes. So for him to just shut his truck off is highly unusual. And then he's facing the wrong way on the road and he wasn't in his truck. I'm assuming they didn't find any kind of sign of a struggle, but because he was hauling baby pigs, it makes one think that perhaps there was a person or two that had blocked the road and he had turned around to try to go around them, perhaps because, you know, maybe he thought that they were gonna, you know, they were protesting because he had pigs or something. That's the only thing that I can think of that could have happened, but maybe he just turned that truck around, pointed it in the wrong direction, got out, and poof, who knows? Another one I found, you guys, comes from InsideEdition.com. Title is, Woman Found Dead at Bottom of Garbage Chute After Company Party. Police Do Not Expect Foul Play. So my guess is going to be maybe she decided she was just going to slide down the trash chute because she was drunk or something. I don't know. We'll see. Surveillance video shows Jacqueline Elmquist, 24 years old, stumbling on a New York City sidewalk before entering a high-rise building. A 24-year-old woman who has gone missing after attending a holiday party was found dead at the bottom of a garbage chute. Police do not expect foul play, but there are many questions surrounding the incident. Yes. So, surveillance video shows Jacqueline Elmquist stumbling on a sidewalk on Sunday night in New York City, appearing to be hurt or intoxicated. She wandered into a high-rise building in the Chelsea neighborhood of Manhattan, but she did not live there or know anyone in the building. Friends and family of Elmquist began searching for her, posting posters describing her as 5'3" tall and 120 pounds. The poster also says she was last seen getting into a yellow cab at Catch Steakhouse in Manhattan, where she had attended a company party. The next afternoon, Elmquist was found dead at the bottom of a garbage chute at the high-rise in Chelsea at West 28th Street. So, sidebar, any of you that live in, around, or near New York City, high-rise in Chelsea at West 28th Street. Is that like a pretty, like, highfalutin, super privileged, elite part of Manhattan? I wish I understood New York City a bit more. Anyway, in order to end up in the incinerator room of the 13-story luxury doorman building, I guess I answered my own question, Elmquist would have had to open the chute and climb inside. Many are questioning if that is possible. This kind of reminds me of that Elisa Lam, I think it was, in the... Oh my God, is that the Chelsea Hotel? And this is the Chelsea at West 28th Street in New York. And Lisa Lam got into the, allegedly, supposedly, on her own, yeah, right, got into one of the water things on top of the Chelsea Hotel in L.A. Many are questioning if that's possible. I read that. Police say there's no evidence of foul play. In another incident, Talia Prokoto's sister, Laura, died the same way 5 years ago. Police said Laura was intoxicated and fell 27 stories inside the trash chute of her building. The family says they are 100% certain that she was murdered. Yeah, because, you know, drunk or high or whatever, you know, unless someone's egging you on and you're being dared, like, why would you climb into a trash chute? Especially any self-respecting woman is not going to climb into a trash chute that, you know, is going to be in that part of fancy part of town, I'm assuming that it is, and just go for a joyride down into the trash. Ew, we're not going to do that. So anyway, quote, here we are 5 years later and we don't have any answers, Talia says. Talia believes her sister's case and that of Elmquist's both need to be fully investigated as potential homicides. I fucking agree. Quote, it's really hard as a woman and as her sister and as a mother of daughters to see how it is just so easy to literally dispose of a woman, Talia says. Isn't that kind of how we're treated in the true crime world though, right? We're just garbage and trash. The cause and manner of Elmquist's death are pending an autopsy by the city medical examiner's office. I'm not believing that she just decided to jump down in the trash chute. I'm not believing that. Okay, our next article comes from ActionNews5.com. Title reads, Man Stabbed to Death at Memphis Apartment Complex, Woman Detained. So again, coming out of Memphis. A man is dead after being stabbed to death at a Memphis apartment complex Tuesday night. Memphis police found the victim when they responded to a domestic situation at Robin Hood Park Apartments. Police did not say when they received the call. Officers say the victim was suffering from multiple stab wounds when they arrived. He was rushed to Regional One Hospital where he was pronounced dead. Police say a woman is detained on the scene, but no charges have been filed at this time. First responders are still at the complex investigating. Oh, that's the whole article. My bad, guys. She stabbed him to death. Well, I don't want to do the typical, well, what did he do? Because, you know, we have to assume that he didn't deserve it. Unless he did. Okay, our next article comes from Kens5.com, K-E-N-S-5, San Antonio News. Title reads, Domestic Disturbance Leads to Husband Fatally Stabbing Wife, Police Say. A sergeant at the scene said the man tried to kill himself after fatally stabbing her, but failed in his attempt. A woman was stabbed to death late Tuesday night, and police say her husband is responsible. San Antonio police were called out to the 200 block of Channing Street in between South Gevers Street and South New Braunfels around 11 p.m. for reports of a domestic disturbance. When officers arrived at the location, they found the wife had been stabbed. The victim, a woman in her 60s, was pronounced dead at the scene. Police believe some sort of altercation occurred between the couple and the man fatally stabbed her. Police say the man, also in his 60s, then tried to kill himself. He was unsuccessful and taken to the hospital to be treated for his wounds. The sergeant at the scene said this was an attempted murder-suicide. It remains under investigation by police. So I'm kind of wondering if it was sort of a if I can't have you, no one can type situation. I don't know. Our next article comes from WMTW.com. Nowcast, it says. Oh, no, WMTW8ABC. Title reads, Maine man, Maine, like the state of Maine, man accused of sexually assaulting young girl. And then it says, police started investigating after a student told her school she had been assaulted. Okay, Rumford, Maine. A Rumford man is accused of sexually assaulting a girl under the age of 15. Rumford police arrested Nathan Thibodeau, 34, and charged him with gross sexual assault. Police say they were notified by the Department of Health and Human Services, as well as a local school, after a student reported being sexually assaulted. Thibodeau was due in court in Oxford County on Wednesday. Police said the case was still under investigation and more charges were possible. Gross sexual assault is a Class A felony, which is punishable by up to 30 years in prison and a $50,000 fine. So there's a picture of him here, and most of you are probably not going to get this reference, but have you guys seen that show Euphoria with Zendaya in it? So he kind of looks like her drug dealer best friend, who's actually one of the more moral characters of the show, except he has brown hair and not red. So there you go. It's kind of what the guy looks like. Moving on. And then I know this is kind of old news, but I was waiting for Monday Morning Murder in the News because I announced this on Instagram and on the Facebook group page. But anyway, so this is coming from TMZ, but I know this to be true because it was from multiple sources. So anyway, in case you have not heard, Jeffrey Dahmer's father, Lionel Dahmer, is now dead. He was 87 years old. So Jeffrey Dahmer's father, Lionel Dahmer, whose relationship with his son was dissected in a recent Netflix series, has died. This according to a new report. Lionel passed away Tuesday while in hospice care in Medina County, Ohio, according to The Sun, which broke the news. The exact circumstances of his death are unknown. Well, I mean, if he was in hospice, you know, bless him. The guy is obviously famous for his relation to the notorious serial killer who murdered, dismembered, and cannibalized upwards of 17 men between 1978 and 1991. He did not cannibalize 17 men. This is the shit that pisses me off. And then I have to remember that I'm like a true crime elitist, and I need to understand that not everyone knows all of the ins and outs of all of these cases. So don't be an elitist. I'm trying not to gatekeep. So once Dahmer's crimes came to light, Lionel was one of the only people who defended him and did countless interviews trying to explain and justify why his son had done what he did. Lionel chalked up Jeffrey's murders to his troubled upbringing and mental illness. You have to understand that Lionel was a scientist, a chemist. He was a highly, highly intelligent man. He was very analytical. So of course he's going to go through every, just like I would and most of you would, because we're interested in the psychology of criminals and all of that. You know, why don't they have that switch to turn it off and not actually commit murders like the rest of us? You know, I just don't think they actively decide to just not shut off. So his dad being so highly analytical, of course he's going to go around and he's going to search for answers. He's going to try to figure out the whys. He was a scientist. Anyway, he even appeared alongside Jeffrey for one MSNBC interview when the killer was already behind bars. Lionel said he still loved his son regardless and would stick by him. Of course, Jeffrey was murdered in prison in 1994, something Lionel decried and resented. Decried? Why is that word weird to me today? Lionel and his son's relationship was portrayed in great detail in the 2022 Netflix limited series, quote, Monster, the Jeffrey Dahmer story, which had Evan Peters playing Jeffrey and Richard Jenkins as Lionel. And poor Evan Peters. Am I right? That poor kid. I thought that he was going to kind of be our next, you know, Johnny Depp or Jack Nicholson or something where he could handle super heavy roles. But like that one kind of sucked some of his soul out. I feel bad for him. The show certainly depicted Lionel as caring for his kid, but also somewhat absent from his life. And at several different points, the character brushed aside Jeffrey's attempts to tell his dad about his misdeeds. And then it just says Lionel was 87. That poor man. You know? Anyway, rest his soul. Our next article comes from NBCNews.com. And the title reads, UNLV gunman who killed three was rejected after applying for a job at the school, police say. Anthony Polito, 67, he was 67 years old, was fatally shot by police following a confrontation outside of the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Why are the boomers uprising? Why are we having a boomer uprising? The gunman who opened fire Wednesday on the campus of the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, killing three people and wounding a fourth, had applied for a job at the school but was not hired, according to two senior law enforcement officials briefed on the case. The officials identified the man as Anthony Polito, 67, who was fatally shot by police following a confrontation outside of the university. Law enforcement officials said the job application for UNLV professor was from 2020 and a specific motive for the shooting is unclear. I mean, it seems pretty clear he didn't get hired. The shooting began on the fourth floor of Beam Hall and then continued to, quote, multiple other floors before the suspect was, quote, neutralized. Las Vegas Police Sheriff Kevin McMahill said the victims have not been identified. Polito kept a personal website about his life, writing about various topics, including his professional career, hobbies, and claims that he decoded the Zodiac Killer's messages. Interesting. He described himself as a, quote, semi-retired university professor, writing on his LinkedIn page that one of the, quote, greatest gifts and takeaways I possess from my many years within higher education are the many kind and positive comments students made regarding my instruction and disposition towards them, end quote. It says he taught at East Carolina University in North Carolina as an assistant professor in the Department of Marketing and Supply Chain Management, a university spokesperson said. He began his employment there on August 13, 2001, and resigned on January 17, 2017, as a tenured associate professor. Several students praised him and his classes, according to posts on ratemyprofessors.com. That's a thing? Interesting. Quote, Dr. Polito's class is one of my favorite classes that I have taken. He provides so many real-world examples with stories which further drive the understanding of concepts. This isn't taught as a typical class, which is looked down on, but I have learned so much and retained the concepts in this class than any other class I have taken. End quote. A November 16th post read. Another student called him the, quote, best professor at ECU, according to an October 2016 post. Others labeled his classes as unorthodox and extremely disorganized and said he was eccentric. In a post from October 2014, a student wrote that he had spent over 2 months just talking about Vegas. Interesting. So, Polito graduated from the Terry College of Business at the University of Georgia, where he earned a PhD in management, according to his website. He wrote that he earned an MBA from the FUQUA School of Business at Duke University, a double undergraduate major in mathematics and statistics from Radford University in Virginia. Oh, I'm a fan of Radford. And boasted about being a member of Mensa, the high IQ society, where people have to take a standardized test, score in the top 2%, and pay dues. Sounds a little braggy to me. A spokesperson for Mensa said he joined in 1980 but let his membership expire by not paying his dues earlier this year. In one section on his website, he said that he had lived in Georgia, Iowa, Nevada, New York, North Carolina, Virginia, and Wyoming. He also wrote about his love for Las Vegas. Quote, "Hard to believe, looking back, but I had the pleasure of making more than 24 trips to Vegas over the last 15 years, he wrote. I don't gamble that much, but there is plenty to do there, that's for sure. 2 exclamation points. Over those years, my steel trap mind collected more information and trivia about Vegas than probably anyone in this state east of I-95, and then in parentheses, at least. So students were gathered outside Beam Hall playing games and eating food when the shooting began, McMahill said. Freshman Jose Lopez said he was watching YouTube videos on the fourth floor of the business school building when he heard a loud boom and then another. Quote, "I was scared and my legs started shaking," Lopez, who was 18, told NBC News. He said he briefly froze like a statue and then ran to the third floor and hid with other people in an academic advisory office. The group waited there until police came and escorted them to safety. Connor Friedman, 20, a junior, also heard gunfire. He said he heard what he initially believed to be construction noise, but quickly realized that it was someone firing a gun nearby. Quote, "That's when I started running. It didn't even feel real at first. It felt like they were lying about the shooting," end quote. So university police were called around 11:45 a.m. local time for reports of an active shooter. Two university police detectives immediately engaged the suspect in a shootout that resulted in the gunman's death, according to university police chief Adam Garcia. University President Keith E. Whitfield called the shooting unfathomable. Quote, "Members of our community lost their lives and others were injured. My heart aches for our UNLV family. I know all of us are sending our love and support to the victims, their families, and friends during this difficult time," Whitfield said in a statement. The shooting comes 6 years after the deadliest mass shooting in modern U.S. history took place in Las Vegas at a country music festival in October 2017. 58 people were killed and hundreds more were wounded. So I'm not kind of wondering in this particular situation if he, let's see, he was like in his upper 60s, I believe. I've already closed out of the article, but you know, I would like to see if he was starting to get like Alzheimer's or dementia or like, you know, something was going on with his brain that he would do that. Because if he loved teaching and he loved students and so on and so forth, just because he didn't get that job or whatever, it just seems highly unlikely that someone in their 60s is going to go on some big shooting spree. But it's whatever, right? Moving on to our next article comes from WXII12.com. And the title reads, "Mount Airy Man Arrested After Shooting Woman in the Face," officers say. So coming out of Mount Airy, North Carolina. A Mount Airy man is behind bars after shooting a woman in the face, according to officers with the Mount Airy Police Department. On Monday, Mount Airy officers were dispatched to Northern Regional Hospital in reference to a gunshot victim. Upon arrival, officers located the victim with an apparent gunshot wound to the facial area. She was later transported to Baptist Medical Center. After further investigation, the suspect was identified as Corey Kane of Mount Airy. On Tuesday, Mount Airy officers, the Surrey County Sheriff's Office, and the North Carolina State Bureau of Investigation located Kane at a residence off of Red Bush Road. So, Kane was charged with attempted murder and assault with a deadly weapon with intent to kill. He is in the Surrey County Detention Center under no bond. Oh, what did she do to deserve a bullet to the face? So disheartening. Oh, so I found this next article, and then I was kind of thinking this has been absolutely done to death. But has the whole psychology part of it been done to death? And so I will ask you, my beloved listeners, my murder fam, my heathens, if you want me to cover Mary Kay Letourneau and Villy Folau, that she, you know, if you want me to cover that one and kind of do the psychological aspect of it, you guys let me know. Just leave a comment or like on Spotify or whatever. Anyway, coming from people.com, title reads, awkward interview that loosely inspired scene in Netflix May-December resurfaces. Quote, this is getting weird. So Netflix's new May-December drama was inspired by the criminal relationship between teacher Mary Kay Letourneau and her sixth grade student Villy Folau. Netflix's new drama, May-December, loosely based on the 1990s sexual assault case surrounding grade school teacher Mary Kay Letourneau's abuse of her then 12-year-old student, Villy Folau, has left viewers conflicted since its release earlier this month. The film, starring Natalie Portman, Charles Melton, and Julianne Moore, was promoted by Netflix as a dark exploration into the pair's divisive relationship and has amassed overwhelmingly high scores from viewers while being received by some critics as both twisted and deeply uncomfortable. The story is loosely based on, and some of the moments that inspired the Todd Haynes-directed film was often far more uncomfortable, as revealed by one resurfaced 2018 interview that inspired one of May-December's most harrowing scenes. Letourneau was sentenced to more than 7 years in prison for child rape in 1997 after repeatedly abusing Folau, one of her sixth grade students, in case you haven't heard of this case. She twice became pregnant with Folau's children before he was 15, despite court orders to keep them apart. The couple married in 2005, despite the criminal history and public controversy surrounding their relationship. They split in 2017 after Folau filed for legal separation, but still lived together and were occasionally spotted out in the Seattle area. Now, I don't know if this is true or not. This is just kind of me guessing, but, you know, they were financially strapped. It was kind of hard for them to, I mean, outside of maybe making money off of granting interviews or something. I think that they struggled somewhat financially. So if they filed for legal separation or divorce or anything like that, it could have helped in a kind of social needs, like maybe welfare food stamp type situation. But don't hold me to that. They also both remained active in the lives of their two daughters, and Folau was at Letourneau's side when she died of stage 4 cancer in 2020. Quote, I'm convinced they were totally in love, Letourneau's friend and former attorney David Gerke told People in 2017 after the couple filed for separation. The relationship is being reexamined by the public once again with the release of Netflix's new drama. So in one scene in particular, Melton's character, loosely based on Folau, loosely is the key word there, confronts Moore's character, loosely based on Letourneau, about who was responsible for their relationship beginning. In the film, Melton's character is chided by Moore's, who repeatedly asks him, who was the boss? Who is in charge? So on social media this week, viewers are noticing similarities to a clip from a 2018 interview Folau and Letourneau did with Channel 7's Sunday Night in Australia, when their conversation with host Matt Doran turned increasingly awkward. The couple's interview with him appears to break down when the host begins to press Letourneau on why she still believed her relationship with Folau was appropriate despite him being 12 years old at the time it started. Letourneau turns to Folau and instead questions him repeatedly, who was the boss? Who was the boss? Who was the boss back then? Who was the boss back then? She asks her husband, who begins uncomfortably looking back and forth between Letourneau and the host without answering. Who was? Just say, Letourneau instructs Folau again. "This is ridiculous," Falau finally says after another awkward exchange. "This is getting weird." Eventually, Falau tells the host, "I was the pursuer," after sharing another glance at Letourneau. That's telling. Despite living together after their initial separation filing in 2017, Falau and Letourneau officially divorced in 2019. Since then, Falau has largely remained out of the public eye. He welcomed a third child in 2022, and earlier this year, his family revealed that Falau would become a grandfather after daughter Georgia announced her pregnancy. Interesting. Anyway, it's a pretty interesting story. If you want me to cover it, you guys, just let me know. Okay, this is going to be our last one for the day. So this comes from CBSNews.com, and the title reads, "Woman, three children found," I guess woman and, "three children found dead in burning Indiana home, had been shot, authorities say." It's giving Josh Powell vibes, am I right? Authorities investigating the deaths of four people whose bodies were found inside a burning home in southern Indiana this week now say all of the victims had been shot. Sergeant Stephen Wellis, a spokesperson for the Indiana State Police, which is investigating, shared new details about the tragedy in the news release Wednesday, where the victims, three children and a woman believed to be their mother, were identified for the first time. They were identified as 35-year-old Naomi Briner, 12-year-old Adelia Briner, 8-year-old Leland Briner, and 6-year-old Isla Briner. The officer said that even though the investigation into their deaths remained ongoing, authorities did not believe there was any threat to the public. First responders found the victims Tuesday afternoon after receiving a call that sent them to a house near Madison, a city along the Ohio River and the Indiana-Kentucky border. The home was on fire when they arrived, and all four were pronounced dead at the scene. The fire was later extinguished. So Wellis had initially said Tuesday that authorities would withhold the victims' names from news statements until the coroner's office in Jefferson County, which includes Madison, could identify them properly. At the time, he also said autopsies to officially determine the causes of death were scheduled to happen in Hamilton County, Ohio, which is in the Cincinnati area, about 80 miles from Jefferson County. So he did not share autopsy results or an official cause in his Wednesday update. Quote, "Further investigation has determined that all four of the deceased had injuries consistent with gunshot wounds at the time they were located inside of the residence. This is an ongoing investigation. However, at this time, investigators do not believe that there is a threat to the public." I would agree with that. I don't think that there's a threat to the public either. And so, with that said, that's going to do it for Monday Morning Murder in the News. We are fast approaching Christmas for those who celebrate, Yule for the others who celebrate, and all of the other religions and just people that celebrate things this time of year. I want to be all inclusive. Some people have to work on Christmas, and some people who are working in customer service right now, and I know this because I've had to be out and I've seen how people are treating customer service people. Y'all need to stop. Seriously, make me proud. Be nice. Those poor people having to deal with the public with all of the Karens, give them a warm smile. Even if you are in the grocery store, wherever you are, and the clerk or the customer service person is just rude as hell, please try to be empathetic, you know? Just understand that they are so stressed, it's so busy, and everyone is so rude, and all the returns and just everything. If any of you have worked any level of customer service, you understand. So let's be kind to the people on the other side of the counter, no matter how grouchy they are, because maybe your kindness, if you go out of your way to do a random act of kindness, will save their day, will give them some amount or some drop of hope for the rest of the day. Because that jobs with that where you're facing customers during the holidays, absolute dog shit, and we all know it. So I task you all with doing a random act of kindness this week to a customer service type employee. Be nice. Give them a warm and encouraging smile. Tell them, hey, hang in there. You're almost through it. You know, we all have to uplift each other. So have a fantastic week. Do try to tolerate your family as much as you can. And if you can't, I understand, because I don't really, like, I went zero contact with my mother years and years ago for very valid reasons. So if you don't have family, then just understand that I'm here. I wish you well. I hope you have a great week, and we'll talk to you later. Bye.